Oh, look at this. Look at this spreadsheet. It's all built up to this.
Look at you go. Man, this motherfucker just loves spreadsheets.
Fucking so hot for spreadsheets. I'm always so hot for spreadsheets.
I don't know that I've ever known anybody to be more horny for spreadsheets than you. My God.
Well, I can name one person. Because I married her.
Oh, okay.
We make and share spreadsheets of video games together.
Oh, my God. That's just disgusting. Uh-huh. That's just gross on a level that just almost confounds me. It's like, this is our...
We have here's our spreadsheet of H games we're both interested in. Let's look over them together and listen to songs from them. Oh, it's been a whole evening of just this, of browsing VNDB and adding things to our spreadsheet. I love her so much, y'all.
So you've cleared everything on this list besides Invictus?
Yes. This has been the training arc to get to Invictus, which is the first one I watched on BDQ.
But it is ranked intermediate now.
I know, but I have been... No, it's actually ranked expert now, but they kind of changed.
They changed their ranking.
Oh, I couldn't remember if it went up or down.
No, yeah, now it's ranked expert. But in the original old school ranking, I have cleared 4 games of the same rank. It was meant to be upper intermediate, so I feel like I can tackle it. All right. Basically, they have expert, and then they added a new rank above expert, so they could kind of split up intermediate. So that, you know, so that the expert level hacks wouldn't be grouped with insane shit like Casio Mario World or whatnot.
Yeah. Trials of Death.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all of this is such good cold open juice.
And that's why I'm going to, that's why I'm going to edit it together, actually.
Okay. This is all real good cold open juice. I'm just waiting for you to be like, welcome to the SoxCast.
Well, not now.
No, I'm just going to let you take it from there.
Welcome to the SoxCast episode
182.
Thank you. Thanks, Polly, with the steel chair to bring it home.
There you go. I'm tagging in, taking my rightful spot back. How's it going out there in internet land? I was gonna make some commentary about how, man, I just had an entire week of like 70 degree weather, and then Rhett just got dumped on like 6 or 8 inches of snow.
It wasn't actually that bad, but it was wet, heavy stuff. And there's a nor'easter coming tomorrow, so yay!
Yeah, it's just we're plummeting back down into like the 30s and 20s again for the next week. So it was. I can't sit here and complain too much because I mean, a week of 70 degree temps where I'm at in February is kind of a godsend, especially after what we just had. I've never been so sick of looking at snow in my life. It's only I finally see that green stuff under the snow that I have not seen in so long. And it was almost shocking to look out my window of a morning and it not just be immediately blinded by the sun hitting the vast whiteness that spread before me. Yeah.
That's what happens when I don't get sun for a long time. Mm-hmm. Get a tan for a while.
Yeah.
I was outside every time I could. It was like 55 degrees here and sunny for a week. And I was just out as much, absorbing it as much as I could.
Yeah, got to get that vitamin D. It's very essential. You know, it really helps with like the winter depression too, I think. Like I noticed that it helped me a lot with the winter depression. So yeah, getting out there.
I take a double dose of that, of vitamin D, just as my standard regimen.
That's just like,
taking vitamin D.
Yeah. On winter, I go on vitamin D supplements because I know it's coming and it doesn't always kind of stop it. But I noticed that it definitely kind of is a nice pillow at the bottom of the hole that I will eventually fall into. But being able to just get out into the sun kind of does a lot of wonders for you.
It's really important. And just moving your body.
Yeah. So
anyway, that's our contribution for the SoxCast wellness self-help hour. be sure to clean your room and do your laundry.
Wash your bed sheets. Please wash your bed sheets. God.
You really do got to wash your bed sheets. Yeah. We got much better about that after we got the cat. So that.
Yeah. You're going to have to get used to cleaning a lot of everything. You're going to bust that PC down every 3 weeks and get. Oh, God. Yeah, it's terrible. That's the one thing I don't miss.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I don't miss that part. You know, now I just crack it open every, you know, 3 or 4 months or so. But when you got a cat, it's just like, oh my God, if you don't clean that computer out every every 2 or 3 weeks or something, you're asking for long time trouble down the line.
There's someone listening right now going, wait, really?
Wait, what? I know one person that has not cleaned her computer in a long time, and she recently started having a lot of issues, and she has two cats. And I'm just like, well, I think I know where the issue may lie, darling.
You're the one who told me about, like, burning candles all the time.
Yeah, that's a bad thing, too. Seeing a bunch of
crap in your computer.
Yeah. You go wipe your fans down after burning candles for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Look how black those blades are. You don't realize it's happening. I didn't realize it was happening until I built, like, a PC back in the day with, like, clear fans, clear window and stuff. And then, you know, I was that candle person because I wanted my room to smell like vanilla all the time. I wanted it to smell like lavender all the time. And then I look at the PC fans when I pull it and say, oh, my God, what have I done to this thing? You're tearing the whole thing down, blowing that shit out with some compressed air. It's terrible for your PC.
But
nobody uses PCs anymore anyway. So
true.
People just use phones. They just do everything.
There's cat hair in my phone.
Yeah, that would be a weird thing. I'm pretty sure it's happened.
I'm sure it finds a way to get in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
There's also litter ever in there.
Yep.
Cats are filthy. I think we can all agree.
Yeah. Just horrible, disgusting monsters that we can't help but want to snuggle because that purring sound is just
so cute.
It's just so good. It's just so good.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Are we ready to get into this?
We're ready to get into it. To my immediate virtual right, his dick's a loaded gun waiting to go off. It's Rhett.
Just call me Trigger.
That's what I'm going to call you from now on.
All cocked up and ready to go.
All cocked up with nowhere to go. Oh, you're doing all right, Rhett. You're doing okay
my
over there.
My body is sore from shoveling.
God, I know. Like, I went through 2 weeks of that, and I was definitely feeling it. But thankfully, you know, it didn't take much to do it. You don't need your arms or body much to do a podcast. You could just be a head in a jar and probably do a podcast. I don't know that you'd have much to talk about, you know, living life in a jar as a head, you know. I don't think there'd be much stimulating conversation or you know, you could probably, I mean, if you got somebody there, you could
watch all the anime.
There you go. You could literally just watch the entire span of anime history, I guess, if you wanted.
As opposed to what I've already done, which is,
I mean, yeah, which it's kind of literally everything you've done. To my immediate virtual left, he alone loves you. It's John.
Hi there.
Hey.
Oh, that's me. I'm always like trying to foster parasocial relationships with our listeners.
I hope it's working. I hope there's somebody out there that's just absolutely obsessed. Or Red had that one time. Red had that weirdo that kept coming into the Discord trying to get him.
For real, you mean?
Yeah, this like he was just dinging Red all the time. Why aren't you updating your website? Why aren't you updating your, hey, do you want to update your website? Oh man.
Another year the movies still aren't back up.
No, they're still not.
Okay, real talk. My ratio on successful, like, wait a minute, does this person have a crush on me? Oh, I don't know. Maybe we need to talk this through. Like, 8 times, like 7 times out of 8, 9 times out of 10. Nope.
I remember one time you misconstrued the term giving you your flowers. Yeah. That's my favorite one.
I didn't know the hip hop.
That's so good.
Yeah, well.
Hey, John, was the 1 out of 8 that hit your wife?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? If you're going to go 1 out of 8, I think that's probably the best possible 1 out of 8 you could get.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, as far as fostering the parasocial stuff goes, no.
Not so great. You'll get there.
I think that's for the best. I already have. My special girl.
You're all and my kitty.
And your cat.
Yeah.
Who's all right, John, let's talk about stuff that the people want to hear about on a podcast. I know everybody's probably getting ready. I see fingers hovering over like the fast forward button here. Do we even have fast forward buttons anymore? I mean, I know they've got those little circle arrows. It's like 15 seconds ahead, 15 seconds ahead. Because that's how I skip all the ads in every podcast that I listen to. So,
Polly, everybody's listening to this at 2x speed.
I wouldn't
ask. You're asking about like a VCR fast forward button where they press it and the podcast goes, whoo.
Yeah, I think that would be way. I think if we brought things back like that in a digital form, it would be more fun. Like, I would do it. I love that shit.
Mm-hmm. Be sure to rewind your podcast after listening.
Rewind the podcast. We're gonna start pressing episodes of the Soxcast to cassette. The only way you can get them is through mail order.
Yeah, we could start making horror games and applying like a bunch of VHS filters to them and posting them on itch.
Mm-hmm. But they're not complete. They're just demos.
Put like PS1, fake PS1.
Fake PS1 polygons. It still moves at 60 frames per second, so it doesn't quite look like a PlayStation 1 game.
Yep. Cool. I started a game jam.
You did!
So I got bullied into this on the podcast, on the Discord by Effie. Thank you. Thank you, Effie. But like, she was talking on the chat, like, oh, it'd be really cool to do like a Discord, like a game jam, for the Sox community. I was like, yeah, I'm really tired, but I've wanted to do it for like 2 years, but I'm really tired. But I have this one idea for this RPG Maker thing. And I laid it out, and they're like, you should do it, John. You should do it, John. And everyone's like, you should do it, John. And then I did it that day. And then it popped off. And now we've had 18 submissions.
That is insane. Like, when that thing went up, I wasn't sure what it was. Because it's maybe it's just because I have my own biases and that I hate RPG Maker 2003.
Turns out everybody does.
Yeah, it turns out everybody hates RPG Maker 2003, but you've got 18 people that have already jumped at the bit to do it, and you even snagged me somehow. Mm-hmm. I am in the middle of my own magnum opus in this stupid program. I am putting way more effort into this than I probably should be. But now I'm here using RPG Maker 2003. And by the end of the week that this show is out, like, my new game will probably be out. So that's insane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. RPG Maker 2003 is on sale for $2 for 47 more hours. Yeah, I don't know if people listening to this will get to it.
This podcast will go up on the morning that the sale ends. You will have about 5 hours to grab any and all RPG makers.
Get on there. Go get 2K3.
Get 2000. Get 2K3. It's, I mean, even if it's 2K3, it's still a very creative tool. It's RPG Maker. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just bad RPG Maker 2000, really.
It has other like features and like some tile set differences. Yeah. I think there's stuff to like about 2003. Look, the fighting is worse. It's side view. It's pseudo ATB. It feels worse than 2000's front view Dragon Quest system.
Mm-hmm. So that's the main difference that I wasn't sure about.
Yes.
So, but is Helen's Mysterious Castle 2003?
I think it's 2K.
It is.
I'm not sure. It's 2K.
Because you definitely see her from the side.
Yeah, well, but it's a custom battle system. It's a custom battle
system. Yeah, it's definitely very custom.
Yeah.
It has the good portraits, too.
That's, and those are 2000, so.
I have a download for the 2000 face sets so people can use them in 2003. Yeah, those are good.
I'm using the 2003 sets because my idea of going into this jam was, all right, we're using RM2K3. I am going to use base-ass default as much as I can. You know what? I can't. Like, look, RPG Maker 2003 does unfortunately not have a fart sound effect, so I had to do a little cheating.
Okay. That's valid. So the rules. Here's the rules to the jam. It's unranked. There's should be as kind of low pressure as possible. Mm-hmm. Ends March 1st. So after this, you should have another week to participate if you like. I made a town, a forest, a little world map, and a few dungeons. It's a very small little chunk of maps. Took me about 2 hours. You can download the project file on the jam page. It's the Cookie Cutter RM2K3 jam. Polly should include a link in the description.
Yeah, we will do that.
And you just download the project and you open it in RPG Maker 2003, and then you do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, it's just an open canvas. You got maps to play with. That was the best part of that. I think that that's the part that I've enjoyed the most is that I just suck at mapping. So when I opened it up and I was able to just kind of like get a base idea and I had things going, it was just like, oh, you know, I've got a canvas to paint on here, and I'm just, you know, turning on the most unhinged poly energy that I can, because I don't have to stop and do another stupid map. All right, I got to make another map for this set piece that I want to do now. It's just like, no, I saw John's maps and it was just like my brain immediately lit like, okay, what if I did this? And then, oh, and then I can just start, you know, your brain just starts popping off with all these little ideas that you could do for set piece. For my game, all I did was, like, I had a rough idea of what I wanted, which was basically just the idea of a character knowing they're in RM2K3 and hating it. And I'm improvising literally everything else. And it's turned out to be a goddamn ball.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, that's the rule is don't make new maps. Don't change the map tiles. Just make a game with them, with the existing maps. And folks are going fucking ham with it. It's crazy. So I'm just looking at the list here. So I made Demon's Keep, which is just the goal was to make a completely normal RPG Maker 2003 game, or like not RPG Maker 2003, a completely normal RPG in the template. Just kind of give folks stuff to bounce off of. Bralef made his first game in RP, like, period. Yeah. And it's like 100 endings.
That's it. How in the world?
like a bunch of
the creativity that this has fostered, the varying styles that I'm seeing show up. You know, I can't wait to actually dig into all of them myself because everything's so wildly different.
Peb's made 4 different shitpost games, include one where you chase pixies around a forest and one that's literally Minesweeper in RPG Maker 2003. What?
I played the pixies one. That one's fun.
It's very cute. Candle from Domino Club made a funny shitpost. Aria of Flowers made a fucking brutally hard game that Bralef just beat today. Craze, who made Wine and Roses, joined and made a randomizer game. Emmy Socks, new podcast listener and Socks friend, made a really lovely, like, dramatic game. Damn it, I just kind of Shmeev made a really good shitpost game made a really funny shitpost game. Alperu made a fishing game I haven't played yet. Somebody named The Kernel contributed a game. I don't even know what that one is. Evergreen Games contributed. Opossum Valley contributed. Oneman made a moody little walk and talk game. And Claymore Gwen contributed, like, something that looks absolutely twisted. So I've played about half of them so far, and I'm really excited to dig into the rest. I'm having an absolute ball with this.
How does one make Minecraft or Minesweeper in RPG Maker?
You can play it right now.
That's insane sounding.
Here you go. You'll get the idea in a second.
Well, I'm not going to actually.
All right. So, yeah, I'm just having a blast. This is I love. I heard you booted up and
that was so loud.
It's really funny. The default RPG Maker title screen music is really funny because a lot of people leave it alone. And it has good shitpost energy. The randomizer one, Dragon Seeker, fucking blew me away. I played that one this morning.
Well, I mean, you've already got these maps, so just go them in random order, I guess.
It procedurally generates all the map connections the way like an actual like Zelda or Pokemon randomizer does.
That's so weird. And if you take this turn, you end up in Silk Song.
Yep. So all that's a blast. I think I really like how mine turned out. I think it made me kind of re-excited about RPG Maker. Got me jazzed to go back to my unfinished projects. Got me jazzed to start new things.
How many unfinished projects you got, John?
I have 2, don't you?
I have exactly 2. Yeah. I'd like to finish them this year. And I have two, and then the ones that I put, I was like, nope, we're done. I'm letting these ones go. I got two that I need to finish. So that it's just been a blast. I'm 63 people have joined the jam as of now.
What?
So I can't wait. I hope to see more entries. I hope to see a big blast of them as the deadline approaches. Yeah, that's generally how these go.
If anything is online with a deadline has taught me anything, it's absolutely everybody's going to wait till the last fucking second.
Yep. Yeah, that's what's insane, is that we've hit 18 with like over a week to go. That's nuts. So this is my first time running a game jam on itch.
Astounding success so far.
I couldn't ask for a better experience. Like, just with the with what we've received so far, it's already been a huge success. I'd be completely happy with.
Do you have a magic number in your head, though, that you really want to hit? Are you sitting there with a number just like, man, I'd really want to see this hit?
Earnestly not. I've already hit, like...
I mean, 50 would be crazy.
I don't think you're going to hit 50. I think
if deadlines and game of the year has taught me anything, if we are at 18 now...
Hello. So I'm having a ball. What was I going to say? Oh, and I couldn't be happier with how the game dev channel on Sox has been. Dude. Everybody's so sweet. Everybody's being so helpful to everybody else. The vibes are off the charts.
It's watching that and participating. It's kind of been unreal, because I've been in some game dev spaces before and just never really felt like anybody was paying much attention to anybody. But you literally have everybody helping everybody. You have everybody checking out everybody's shit. Like, it's so wildly different. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, given the fact that that's just kind of the vibe of our community anyway. So I think that that's just going to come naturally. But so many new faces joining and doing things, and it's just like, that was another thing that was sort of intimidating for me at first in order to get started. It's just like, I know some of these people have made really cool stuff, and I'm just, oh, here's my dumb game that's gonna fart at you sometimes. All right. But then you see, you know, chasing fairies around and somebody making Minesweeper and a game with 100 endings, and it's just like, oh, okay, you know what, there's probably room for a game that'll probably fart at you every now and again.
I think for sure. I think we set the tone very nicely at the top.
Yeah.
If you can't make new maps, just make a first-person visual novel.
There you go. You could. You know what? That was one of my first thoughts. It's just like, you know what? I'm going to swerve your ass. And I thought about doing a VN.
Somebody already has done text-based adventure sections.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's very, very cool. I love the creativity I'm seeing on display here, though. Just like finding ways to work around the parts of RPG Maker that not a lot of people really want to engage with. The combat.
Anyway, my game has fucking pristinely balanced combat.
I've heard it's pretty well done. So I'll be interested. As somebody who's kind of a... I pride myself on kind of understanding those systems and understanding balance. Well, I'm eager to see how that hits me. So, because even like facets, even facets had like a really good balance to it. So you've got the pedigrees there.
That's the two projects I have left. One of them has like boss fights and character progression, and one of them doesn't. And I want to have fun with both of those. RPG Maker, it's just.
I'm so much more excited for RPG. Like RPG Maker, I've had RPG Maker MV installed since I bought it like 4 years ago. And I've poked at it. I've done some custom things here and there. It's just like all in service of like, you know, I want to do Poly Dungeon 2 sometime as an actual dungeon crawler, because I love dungeon crawlers. And that I could never keep the fire going, and it's just like I felt like just such as like, man, no, like I think this could be a reality, like I think I can actually do this. This is something that I think has just been an overwhelming source of inspiration, and like I know for me personally, it's just like kind of helped me reemphasize like things that I feel I'm good at and I don't have to stop and worry about the things that I'm bad at. So I can just focus 100% on what I want to do. And that it's just been such a cool little experience. I've never done a game jam other than the Ruin Jam, which was...
God, that was 12 years ago.
Man, every episode has to have a reminder of how fucking decrepit we are at this point, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Fuck, that's funny. I'm really happy you're having a good time. I really think if you just like put on an album, got a project idea, wrote down the maps you needed, put on an album and slammed out like, here's the rough shapes of everything I need. And then you put on another album the next day and just like tinker with them until the tiling looks basically fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be able to make do everything else. No problem.
I think it's just a matter of sitting down with it and having some consistency and just trying it and just keep doing it. Doing it over and over, you will find that, you know, study maps that you like and understand why you like the way that they look and feel. So, yeah.
Oh, for sure. It's loading up, like, Final Fantasy IV maps or whatnot.
That's something I've done. I'm really kind of thinking, like, you know, maybe I can do something a little more. I was kind of eyeing VX Ace. I like its default battle system
a
lot.
I like VX Ace.
I like that you can play with the battle formulas and stuff in that game. So it's just like, you know... Maybe there's something I can do down in the future. Maybe it's a little more smaller scale than a Poly Dungeon 2, but we'll see. It's just I just know that RPG Maker is now solidly on the list of things that I'm going to be playing around with a lot more.
Yay. Yeah, that's... I first messed with RPG Maker when I was like 12.
Mm-hmm.
My first internet forums I seriously contributed to was an RPG Maker forum. And then I didn't finish anything in it until I was 24.
Right. Yeah.
And then I didn't touch it again for quite a long time. So it feels really good to be getting back into this zone.
Don Miguel's RPG Maker 2000. My first RPG Maker was literally in 1998. I played RPG Maker 90, yeah. RPG Maker 95. I remember a friend had that downloaded, and I stayed at his place, and I stayed up playing with that all night. And I also own RPG Maker on PS1, and I've finished a game in that, but I can't get that to anybody because it's just on a memory card somewhere. But you know, having like there's just always something there that's been there. It's just like I want to make an RPG, and you can, and that just feels really empowering.
There's nothing like I remember sitting down to make a thing and just like having an idea, and then I sat down and 3 hours later, I had like a 2-minute intro cutscene I was happy with.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
That's the cool
so
thing.
It's hard to do in anything else.
Yes. When you figure out event triggers and switches and variables and how easy it is to just like make things happen on screen and it looks like a video game just right out the box, it's so easy to kind of just like feel yourself get swept away in that.
Yep. 1,000%. Don Miguel. Like the game jam post.
That's so goddamn cool. Like Don Miguel. He's still knocking around, man.
Uh-huh.
That's absolutely nuts.
Yep. Makes me happy.
Yeah.
So that's been a ball. I could jerk off forever about this. Mm-hmm. It's just been a really good time. I played a couple video games.
Oh, did you?
I finished two RPGs I brought up last time. Let's do the bad one, and then let's do the good one.
All right.
So last time we talked about Breath of Fire.
a hot topic of discourse on the Discord once that episode rolled out.
It's hot when it's called Breath of Fire. And also it's a lukewarm piece of shit. All right. So this is ignited many a friendship ruining discussion. So last time I was here, I was kind of like, well, you know, it's fine. It's kind of mid. It's like good mid. It's Capcom flavored. They've got Capcom sound effects and like a pretty battle system and like good impacts on hits and whatnot. Like, what more do you really need? And then I was like, well, I don't know. It's still not. There isn't really zest. I don't think this is really something I'd recommend. So,
I'll explain what's happening.
Okay.
When we transition to red.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
Since then I finished the game and now I have extremely specific complaints. I think that if it weren't for these, I would have enjoyed the creative dungeon designs. There's one where they spin this, where they have spinners that actually like spin the screen around with mode 7.
Mm-hmm.
That's adorable. There's ones where the walls become invisible.
Oh my God. There's my hatred.
That has to be the good part because there's nothing else
There's nothing.
Yeah. There's two dungeons that take place inside a dream. There's a boss that starts off extremely pixelated and then slowly zooms into focus as the fight progresses. That's all cool. That's all cool. That's something. There's a snake lady who's funny. Some of the little episode cutscenes have like a fun narrative zest to them, I think. There's one with like a doomed couple where one of them is one of the emperors of the Demon King or one of the four generals. They don't introduce like the villains in earnest until like over halfway through the game, like 2/3 through the game, and they start having villains that are actual characters. Mm-hmm. So, like, in some ways, the back half has a lot more flavor than the first half, I think. This is the thing that pisses me off. You go through a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
You see a locked door. You can't open it right now.
No.
So you make a note, and I'll come back later. You continue in the dungeon. You see a crumbling wall. And you examine it, it says, if you had someone stronger, maybe you could break this down.
Mm-hmm.
Like you make a note of that. It'll come back later. I go into a house and it says, you could move this jar if you had someone stronger. Okay, I'll come back later. There's a locked door. Okay, I'll come back later. Oh, there's dungeons, houses, caves, towns, everywhere. There's shit to come back later.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like sixteen different kinds of keys. Like you finally get the thief that unlocks locked doors. Okay. You get the thing that can go underwater. Okay. You get the thing that you get the guy that can break down rocks and walls. So I break down rocks and walls, and then I go to the house where there's a thing that needed somebody strong to push.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, no, you need somebody stronger to push this. I'm like, what? Okay, and then later I get a fusion of that character and a different character, and then I can go back and push the wall. There's things on the world map that you can dig up when you get the mole in your party. There's, and you have to remember where all those are. There's wells you can fish for once you get the level 5 fishing rod. And there's dragon shrines you can come back to after you get find the dragon armor, which you need the level 5 fishing rod, which you find under a rock in a random town.
Nobody doesn't like Metroid from the sounds of it.
I don't want to play Zelda. I'm not playing RPGs to play Zelda. I don't want to play Zelda. I don't want to remember to come back after I get the hookshot. That shit sucks.
Yeah.
Let me play the game.
Oh, this is going to be a controversial one.
Let's
I can tell.
Go.
Look.
What do you mean Zelda's not an RPG?
Zelda, I don't care about whether Zelda's an RPG or not. It's just when I'm playing an RPG, like, fine, there's one kind of locked door in towns, mm-hmm. and if I come back with the key later, I can open it. Okay, but you don't need 17 kinds of keys, and you don't have to put them in towns, dungeons, the world map. Every single place in the game doesn't need to have 17 different kinds of locked doors.
It sounds excessive.
It's ridiculous.
It's cute when you. It's cute if there's like one or two hanging around and you got to come back like once or twice. But if that's the whole damn premise, it's
busy work.
Yeah, it does become busy work.
It's like the person plays Dragon Quest and gets the key and comes back to the castle to get the sword later, and they go to all the towns to unlock the locked doors, and then they're like, this is the best part of the game. Let's make an RPG that's all about this. I'm like, no! The best part is dungeons and exploring.
And number
the
go
best
up.
Part isn't The best part isn't remembering, oh, if I get the super missile, I can come back here and shoot open the green door.
Mm.
What the fuck? Who's playing RPGs to shoot open the green to remember, oh, I can better come back here with a double jump. No! And level doesn't matter, because the only thing that matters for the finale is just getting the Ultimate Dragon Form.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you have to find the key, and then you get the Ultimate Dragon Form, and it just does 999 damage every turn.
999. It's the most boring, limp dick climax.
Oh my god. So there's no, like, so equipment doesn't matter, level doesn't matter, the RPG doesn't matter. All that matters is remember to go back to all of these fucking places, and if you forget any of them, then you're just hosed. It's really obtuse. Like, I was writing stuff down, and then I was like, well, surely, like, I thought that the mole things I had to dig up were just going to be, like, landing places for a flight thing later. But no, it was another fucking thing to remember. There's like four different kinds of locks just on the world map. I hate this. I hate this shit. This isn't what I want out of RPGs. I don't like this.
No.
I don't want to play. I want to play Zelda when I'm playing an RPG. I want to run around mazes, just honest mazes without a bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's my Breath of Fire rant.
I look for to kick up again on Discord after this episode. Cause man, when that discourse was going for a while, even just from the first episode, and people kind of thought maybe you'd kind of turned a corner on it. Oh. And then there's like the heel turn that comes afterward.
I played Metroid Prime 2 last year, and that's that entire fucking game. It's like, oh, I got the purple gun. Now I can shoot open the purple door at the start of the game. And then I go in and it's like, oh no, now you need the green gun. That you didn't even get a thing. You came here and shot open the door. And now there's a different kind of locked door behind it. Zelda Oracle of Seasons did that constantly.
The Silk Song experience.
Really, the Silk Song experience? Isn't it? It's mostly money gating you, right?
You beat bosses. You beat bosses and run into locked doors sometimes, or areas you can't progress to, and sometimes that's a little unfulfilling.
Well, that was the thing with Hollow Knight, was that it was there, but there was so much more of the game you could just explore freeform compared to like an Igavania or something.
Right, where Breath of Fire is literally just structured entirely around, okay, like, here's, go to this place, but there's a locked place here, so go back to this place, go to this new place, and then it's where you get the key to go to this new place, so go back to the first place, open that first and second door, but there's a third door that needs a new doodad that you gotta get. Yeah, like, that whole structure feels kind of bad.
It's Kirby 64 shit. It's like, hey, come back with this power up. Hey, better remember to come back later so you can unlock the true ending.
Right.
Instead of just playing Kirby, instead of just playing an RPG. Bullshit. It's all bullshit. Don't like it. I just want to play a game. I don't want to keep track of a million.
Give
keys.
This boy not, some mazes.
Not. I'm not. I'm not like a night guard keeping trigo with a bunch of keys on a ring, like, oh, better need get this one. Oh, I don't have this key. Blah, 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 blah. All right. That's about the fire rant. Played one more game and then I'm done.
Okay.
I went back and finished Alexandra H's Jailbird Nocturne.
Oh yeah. 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 This one's on my to-do list.
It is nice. It is a nice, sweet itch game. It was like a 6 to 8 hour game for me. It's an RPG Maker game. I think it's VX Ace. The combat is like really crunchy. It's not just by like having like tight numbers. It's that characters have very specific toolkits, and enemies have, also have very specific toolkits, where it's the kind of game where status effects and buffs are really, really important.
I love that shit.
Aw. So you have these boss fights that are just like whole puzzles where just figuring out how to get in to their AI and open them up to deal damage is really satisfying.
This sounds like something I would be interested in.
It's all fixed encounters. It's like symbol encounters on the world map. It's not grindy. It's balanced so that you just kind of naturally hit the level cap playing through the game normally. And then the writing and art and music are all just really, really charming. It's all done by Alex.
I love the art style here. It's just so handmade and personal, and just, it's really distinct. It really stands out and unique.
I'd love to play a game, especially something of this kind of scope where the, the art, music, game design, and writing is all one person, and it's all like competent. That's crazy. I think my one big observation here is that it has one of the coolest implementations of a rival fight I can think of in an RPG.
Ooh.
I'm not going to spoil like the specifics of how it goes down, but I really like how it's implemented. I wound up yapping with her afterwards and hearing how it was designed on like the back end level. I was like, yes, yes, yes. So I had a ball with this. It's a sequel to a shorter game called Danger Zone on her itch page. But just, I haven't played that one yet. This was still satisfying on its own. I'm really excited for whatever she does next. This was just an absolute joy from top to bottom. Ton of characters I really like. I love Lucifer, the Feta demon. Cause that, those are the elements are fire, ice, lightning, earth, and cheese. So there's a bunch of cheese themed elements. You're a super wizard in the interzonal space between the demon world and the real world, and you're trapped and trying to escape. And you're kind of put it shanghaied into fighting demons, and that's the plotting. And then there's a bunch of cute characters and good jokes. And awesome. Some good drama near the end. It has a really dope finale. It goes hard.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my arcs. Jailbird Nocturne, much better than Breath of Fire. kicks Breath of Fire's ass. And every game in the Cookie Cutter Jam kicks Breath of Fire's ass. So come join us all in kicking Breath of Fire's ass.
Yeah, let's all kick Breath of Fire's ass together.
That's the name of my game jam game.
There you go. Let's kick Breath of Fire's ass.
I can't believe it's the same series as Dragon Quarter. That's insane.
The real rub is that all the Breath of Fire fans were like, we don't like this.
We don't like Dragon Quarter. Yeah, that's the thing, is that any time I bring up Dragon Quarter around, you know, those kinds of groups, it's like, oh, yeah, that's the bad one.
That's not a Metroidvania.
I love to unlock doors. I love to forget about to remember to go back to doors later. That's my favorite thing.
Oh,
I played Breath of Fire as a kid and just do not remember the door stuff at all for some reason.
You just flushed it out of your memory because it's just doors. Nonsense.
I don't even know if I beat it. I think I did.
It's just really nondescript, really. There's not much to remember about that first game.
Fucking god, except the snake lady.
She's the snake lady's the best part, and it's just because she's a snake lady.
She's pretty funny. She's got some good jokes. The writing, it almost does feel a little bit like it has a little bit of that RPG Maker vibe where it's like getting a little bit more confident in itself as it progresses.
Yeah.
But it's the locked key shit also becomes more and more intrusive as it progresses. So it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other. All right, that's my segment.
Okay, so before we pass it to Rhett, like I knocked my microphone over earlier, just in a fit of excitement.
Yes, we've all been waiting to find out.
And the reason is like I stepped out like for about 2 or 3 minutes while John was doing the game jam thing because a friend of mine had stopped by, they dropped me off this very lovely gift of they went to a Nine Inch Nails show last night. They went to the Peel It Back tour to 2026 and
nice.
they bought me the tour shirt. And I was just, opening it up and just almost crying and trying to like contain myself, and I knocked my mic over. So yeah. thank you, Jay. That was very, very, it was so sweet of you. You didn't have to do that. But that was absolutely lovely of you. I just wanted to put that out there. That's my story. Rhett!
I thought it was a cat knocked over your shit.
No, I don't own any pets. I don't want any pets at this point in my life. I'm totally fine without them. I got friends that have pets and I enjoy them, and then they get to live with the problems of owning a pet.
Perfect. They get to deal with the poop and the pee they
get
every day.
There you go. There you go. I come over, I get the purrs, they get the poop and the pee. Purrs, poop, and pee. That's about all you get out of cats.
So, I am in the middle of another Trails game.
We're back!
As I was last episode.
Trails is back, baby!
I think I had mentioned it. I had just started last episode, I think, because this came out over a month ago now.
Yeah.
This is Trails 13, right? Oh,
I've truly lost count at this point.
We are finally caught up. That is the thing, we are finally caught up.
The name of this one is Trails Beyond the Horizon, even though I just call it Daybreak 3, like it should have been.
This was the one that was subtitled Goodbye Ozymburia, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so boy. it's gonna be like a big like finale game, right? Where it kind of ties everything together.
It's I wasn't sure. I'm still not sure how to talk about this right now because I am deep in the middle of it and it's cooking, but I don't know where it's going yet. Iffy beat it the other day and seemed just completely fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah, it seems like ending. That game fucked that girl up. I've seen yeah. I've been in other DM conversations with her and seeing her just like her mind seems to not be functioning properly at the moment, which leads me to believe it's just like Trails did Trails things.
Good.
Trails. I mean, I had heard to expect a Cold Steel 3 type ending.
Okay.
And the fact that they didn't. The next game wasn't a sequel to this. It was a remake of first, and then the next game after that was a remake of second. Still waiting on the fucking payoff to this apparently crazy cliffhanger.
Yeah, that's all I was cracking a joke about, was that I'd heard that from you.
And then they still haven't announced the one after this, and then they go and do Kyoto Xanadu, and I'm like, oh boy. It's probably like the longest gap between mainline entries, if you don't count the remakes, which obviously... It's also weird. It's like, is the next one just going to get a huge visual upgrade because the Sky remakes look really good?
Yeah, they are really, really nice.
Really pretty.
Yeah. So the structure of this one is, it's Daybreak 3 in that, you know, it's the same setting in Calvert and the same main characters. But it brings back kind of the root stuff from Reverie, where like 70% of the game you're playing is Vaughn and crew. And then you have, hey, Reen Schwarzer from Cold Steel is back. And Kevin from Trails 3rd is back.
Hey, we love him.
We love Kevin.
So you will have so you'll have chapters where you play as them, and they're cooking a lot. There's a lot going on. I don't want to spoil, even though I'm almost in a position where I still can't spoil because I don't know where this is all going. Because basically Vaughn is dealing with stuff from the previous two games. Like the aftermath of what happened in those. Reen stumbles into aftermath of Cold Steel stuff. So it's like, you realize like, oh, it's not just like a fan service thing. It had to be him in this arc for very specific reasons. And when you realize that, it's like, oh, huh, where does this go? And then Kevin is like unretiring from his heretic hunter position. So his is like, investigating a crime against, you know, the laws of casualty.
Oh my god. And
his arc is probably the most interesting one so far, because the punishment for the crime that he's investigating is death,
obviously.
Yeah. And it's a character you've known for a bit, so the fact that they're being accused by the church now of something is pretty heavy, and you're like, oh, what is going on here? How long have you guys been setting this up?
Interesting.
So the long-term storytelling is finally coming home to roost.
Finally fucking cooking in. Like, Ouroboros is finally making some moves again after
being... Oh, they're back? Oh, hey, I thought that they just kind of started writing them out after fucking Cold Steel 4.
They've been quiet for a while, for sure. There was a plot reason given that was like kind of like, again, I don't know where this is going. I guess I'll just say this part. It's like Ouroboros signed a non-intervention clause with the president of Calvert at one point.
Interesting.
And that clause expires today where I am in game. So it expires today, and today is the launch of the shuttle into space. So everything is coming together right now where I am. It's literally 7 a.m. and I'm playing as Reen, and he's like in the town next to the space station, or not the rocket launch site. I'm just like, boy, this whole game is like edging. It's great. Like, you just, it's just plot thread over plot thread, and you're just not sure where this is going, because I can describe like the heretic hunting stuff with Kevin pretty easily. The shit Van is dealing with, I'm just like, I don't even know where to begin to explain that. It's just like, oh, okay. And how that is related to what's happening in the other routes, and like what Reen knows at this point. And, like, because it's interesting where you're playing as these three groups of characters that aren't communicating with each other that much.
Interesting.
Because all of this happens in like 3 days of game of real, you know, in universe time. So it's like you'll play the morning as Reen, and then you play the morning as Van, and then the morning as Kevin, and then you play like the evening as Van, and then it's okay, so now it's the next day, but it's been like 24 hours of game time.
No, they're just, you know, hey, they're just simulating a real day. It's like that TV series 24, where every episode is an hour of the day.
God, you could practically make a Let's Play this game that actually was in real time like that. So, like, story-wise, they are cooking. I'm really interested in where this is going. I realized last night when I, like, hit the next chapter select screen, like, oh, there's a lot more of this than I thought left. I thought the next chapter may have said finale, and it did not.
Yeah. You're like, because you dinged us yesterday. Hey, maybe we could push the podcast back. I think this theme's about to wrap up. And then you get to, it's like, oh, no, I've got four. I got to select got between at least four routes now.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's three routes, and then it does not imply at all that that's the end. So there's probably at least four. Because usually it's been like, you get a choice, and then you play a mandatory one as Vaughn, and then you get a choice, and then a mandatory one. So, like, story's definitely cooking. Not sure where it's going, but apparently it's going to go big at the end, for sure. Gameplay-wise, it is very much Daybreak 3, where...
Yeah.
I'm not super into the combat. It's not bad at this point, but I've never really vibed super hard with the switch to real-time combat for trash enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, like, I'm still like, I'll initiate the fight and then immediately go into turn-based and just drop an S-craft and be done with it.
That's really funny.
Because some of the ways you can set up the orbments are, like, gain plus 50 CP after winning a fight.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can just sort of just keep doing that over and over until enemies start having, like, 200,000 HP. And it's like, okay, I actually have to fight them for real. But... yeah, they just put so many enemies in the dungeon sometimes where it's like, okay. And then the level scaling, as usual, is like extremely, extremely strict, where it's like, you walk into a dungeon and kill enemies and you'll gain like a level. Mm-hmm. And then like three levels later, you'll get like 20 experience. It's like,
and that just feels terrible.
Okay, you're capped here. So it's like, if you kill everything in a dungeon by the end, you're just not gaining experience.
Yeah, you're
it's
getting
like,
okay, nothing.
Just run past everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they definitely maybe overestimate how many fights people are going to do, but it's fine. And then they do have like the VR dungeon, like just so that there's more RPG in here, because a lot of this game is talking. A huge amount of parts of this game is talking, and just characters like sharing information or not sharing information, all these factions going around. And like, it's like, it feels at times like a 3D visual novel where it's just like, instead of purely, you know, 2D sprites talking to each other, it's just like, hey, we modeled these arenas and have the characters like emote and stuff.
They've written such a threaded story at this point that you just can't have short cutscenes, though. I mean, the things that they have to unravel, when you look at the entire course of that series, there's no way you can just have a simple 2-minute cutscene.
No. Just the cast bloat is a little insane, and like having everybody, you know, constantly run into each other and be like, oh, it's been 5 months since I saw you. Oh, it's been. And then like this one maybe stretching back the furthest, where like every time somebody meets Kevin, they'll be like, oh, it's been however many years since Trill's Third happened.
Oh, my God.
So it's just like they've got the whole swath of cast from a lot of franchises at this point.
Yeah, you can skip that one, though. That's not that important, right?
God. I'm sure. I'm not sure if he hinted this to me or not, but it's like, I'm sure more stuff from Third will come up. I mean, just the fact that Kevin is back.
This is a character they've kept largely on the back burner for a long time. So for Kevin to be back is such a big deal, especially given his position.
And him being like the main playable character in that route. It's funny. He's teaming up with Swin and Nadia from 7 and 9.
Oh, the Assassins. Like,
Oh, the Assassins. They're back. Like, they have navigated those characters through this. Because they're in Daybreak 2 a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like them. Like, they were, like, one of the only things I liked in Reverie, so.
Yeah, so it's cool that they're back. They, I don't know, just the amount of cast and characters that they navigate is just, whew.
Like, when you, that happens with Trails at this point, where you get to the final final battles in Cold Steel 4, and the character select screen pops up, and I literally just laughed, because it's like, five rows of 10 characters. It's like, my God.
It's so ridiculous. Because that, like, when you're in the VR dungeon where, like, all the groups are teaming up together, it's like that one scene in Reverie where, like, 30 characters walk up to the final boss, and then that one specific screenshot gets memed a lot. I've seen it several times. Mm-hmm. Every encounter ends up like that, where it's like your entire 10-20 person crew walking up to like one member of Ouroboros, and they're they're gonna fight all of you, huh? Okay, let's actually do it 1-on-4. You can't have everybody in your party at once. It's just so funny. This is the walk up every time,
right?
Just, you're putting all these even in Van's group by itself. When they're like, okay, let's go to the bar and share information. And then it's like a huge round table with 12 characters. Because his party is so ridiculously big. I'm enjoying this one. I'm definitely not bored or annoyed like I was in 1 or 2. Because Daybreak 1 was kind of boring, and Daybreak 2 was kind of annoying because of how the plot played out. Mm-hmm. Where it's just, Daybreak 2 just felt like, oh, none of this matters. And then now this game is going, maybe it did matter.
Yeah.
It did all matter. Yeah, I'm not sure if this franchise needed, or this sub-franchise needed 3 games to get to this point, but they definitely needed 2, because there's not a ton of character introduction and development in this one, because they've already played those cards.
Yeah, I would hope at this point that they're not just, throwing 5 or 6 new characters at you, because that'd
be a lot. Yeah. Yeah, it's mostly working with the pieces that it already had, but it has like 100 pieces.
It's got 100 pieces.
Yeah. I mentioned to Iffy that we're doing a podcast before I finished the game, and she just laughed like, oh boy, how you talk about this game is going to change by the next episode. So this is my interim update.
So this is your Breath of Fire, where we get your first half now, and then 3 weeks later we get the second half.
I think I'm a little more than halfway through, but because I thought I was closing in on the finale, I think I'm at the like back half of chapter 3.
Right. Okay.
But there was something that happened. Like, I mentioned that this game has a lot of towns and like a lot of dungeons or like underground areas. There's very little going outside because you don't really walk between towns. You just, cutscene through cars.
Yeah.
I was 60 hours in when the game had a single outdoor map that wasn't a desert.
That's
just a good old fashioned highway, blue sky, green fields. Wow. And I go, oh my God, there actually is a map that looks like Trails First in here.
That's wow. So it's shocking. That's so
that was crazy.
I feel like Trails is like they're outside dungeons and fields that you run through connecting cities and stuff. Like that's such a thing. Like they I know that it's just a very base part of RPGs, but that's one of those things that I always liked about those games, even the 3D ones especially, where the nice vistas, things look nice, and it's just kind of fun to that. So, but when an entire game is like stuck inside, like of buildings or caves or underground or whatever, it's kind of like the Mary Skelter thing that I talked about, where you never see blue sky in that game, and then when you finally do see it, it's just like this moment of like, huh.
It really was kind of like that, because like Cold Steel, like you would travel between the cities on a train,
But then
those maps to walk between cities actually did exist.
Yeah.
They just don't exist in this one.
Oh.
Or this whole in Daybreak at all. You just drive between towns.
You just drive everywhere, yeah.
And then you don't even actually control that. It's just all story-based.
It's just, yeah.
And, like, yeah, all the dungeons are, like, sewers or underground facilities. I was laughing about this one. I'm just like, are there any places in the city that don't have, like, a secret underground dungeon at this point? Because, wow, it comes up a lot.
Well, see, they're building the Orbital Internet, and all that stuff is just done underground. So, you know, everything's just kind of going
that's
that way.
That's closer than you'd think.
I mean, that's kind of where I thought the series was going anyway, so it makes sense.
Yeah. There was one cutscene, this is the last thing I'll say, there was one cutscene where, because Kevin was there, because some other characters from earlier games were there, some visual elements showed up, the dungeon setting itself, it all came together to where I went, oh my god, this feels like Trails in the Sky again.
Aww.
And I haven't had that feeling since, like, second chapter.
Wow.
Because, like, oh, enough visual elements were on screen at once, so I'm just like, oh, damn, that hit in this nostalgia in a weird way. You've even got a joke character that everyone is clowning on.
Fantastic.
Girl Boris is laughing at her. Kevin's laughing at her. Everyone's just like, oh, she might die, but whatever.
You know, we're not losing much.
They have a new Gilbert to mock constantly.
Oh, fantastic. Good. Gilbert was real good. They got a lot of mileage out of Gilbert.
Yeah. It's not literally Gilbert, thankfully.
No.
I think he's done.
Yeah, he's donezo.
So, yeah, I'm very interested where this one's going.
It's just like, Daybreak is like the thing where it's just like, I know a lot of what I feel toward Valcom games right now is colored by Reverie, just kind of leaving a real bad taste in my mouth. But I keep thinking, it's just like, man, every time I see Daybreak, it's just like, I am pretty sure I'm going to like you, but I need some distance from the series for a while. So it's just like, I'm not trying to, like, shit talk the series or Falcom or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just that one game, like, made me feel like Falcom was saying to me, this series is now something that is no longer catered to you. Whereas everything, like, when I start, you know, like, even the parts of Daybreak that people don't like, I still think seem more palatable than Reverie to me.
I forget. I think me and Iffy are definitely the Reverie.
Yeah, y'all are the
defenders.
Reverie lovers, and God bless you for it. You know, somebody's got to be.
But then I was the one who was like, Daybreak 1 is the worst game in the franchise.
And that's wild, so because Daybreak 1 is the one I've heard most people kind of gush about up until this one.
So I'm the weird hate. Yeah, I'm the weird hater about that one, because I'm just like, this is the slowest game I've ever. The one thing to really grind my gears is the game being, like, slow.
Yeah.
The game's really slow. It's tricky because these games are very long.
Yeah, yeah.
There's almost no level to where this game, Beyond the Horizon, would be good enough to where I would recommend you playing the previous two to get to it, because that's like 200 hours.
Yeah.
Like it's just too much of a time commitment.
It's so much game.
To ever recommend if you're not already
like the
deep in it.
The thing for me is with I think that if I do go back to Daybreak, you know, I'm kind of probably going to throw quote-unquote gamer pride out the window. I'm not going to be playing it hard or anything. Like, I'm here for the story, and that's it. Like, I'm pretty sure Maple plays all of these games on easy and just has a ball with them and is enjoying the story just the same. And I think that when I come back, that's probably how I'm going to approach it, because I don't know. Like, the combat system didn't really, like, I've played a bit of it. Like, I've played probably the first 3 or 4 hours of that game, the first Daybreak game. And it's just like, I don't know. It's fine. I liked Metaphor better.
Yeah. Was it the turn-based or, like, the real-time combat
The real-time, or not the real-time combat was just kind of eh, but I didn't really care much for the turn-based, like, what they did to the turn-based system. I know that they kind of had to move away from what they were doing, because that system that they were currently using for the Cold Steel games is just so broken by that point that it's impossible to make a new challenging game in that. But I'm just not the biggest fan of it. And I think that in turn also kind of turned me off to the Trails in the Sky remakes as well, because it basically is the same combat engine.
Yeah, it really is, as far as I know.
And that's fine. Like, I still want to play that too, because I love Trails in the Sky, but I'll probably wait until SC is out before I dig into that first one.
I was thinking of just skipping to the second chapter, and then I'm like, playing this one, I'm like, oh, these games are really long, though. Maybe I'll play Xenoblade X instead.
Hey, speaking of, that literally just kind of got announced. Like, hey, free, what was it, free update? Or is it like a $5? A $5 update, and you can play that on your Switch, too, now.
I mean, you already could play it on the Switch, too, but now it's
Going to be all nice and pretty.
About that, people have realized it's using, like, AI upscaling. It looks weird.
It looks bad, Red.
Okay, it looks bad. That thing I posted was specifically captured in handheld mode. Mm. It's not as bad if you're playing docked.
Okay.
But I think they will. Apparently, Nintendo is offering refunds, which is crazy for Nintendo to do that.
That is... Wow. Okay.
Hopefully, they put a little more time in the oven on that by April when the physical comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I couldn't believe I see last night that people are like up in arms, mad about the visuals. Like,
oh, I didn't even catch that.
It's like just breaking because this, you know, just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole screen is kind of shimmering every frame during cutscenes because it's upscaling in a weird way.
I don't.
It's like. Mm. So someone speculated like it's Monolith Soft's own internal thing, not like the NVIDIA one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like very rough right now, maybe. I just wanted the damn frame rate update.
Yeah.
So,
I think this is something to brace ourselves more and more, even with like the good studios that we like to start rolling this shit out.
I mean, that stuff can work well, but I'm just not sure why it was needed for... A Wii
U port. It was already HD. I don't understand.
Like it's a game that already looks good. I don't know.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I played Xenoblade X and it was like, holy shit, AAA video games.
On that one, I'll agree with you. John playing like Tales of Berseria being like, oh my god, AAA or Pokemon.
Look at this. Video games are amazing.
Meanwhile, the entire internet every day, Pokemon looks like dog shit.
Well, that's the Switch ones. I was playing Pokemon Sun, and the 3DS ones look nice. Everyone agrees there, right?
I mean, I guess the gap wasn't as big, but the funniest comparison is looking at, like, Xenoblade 3, and then...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Pokemon game from that period, like, Scarlet Violet, and it's just... Oh, the gap is so big.
Night and day. One's playing Home Run Derby, one's playing T-ball. Yeah, T-ball.
the models don't even look cute in the newest ones. It's crazy. Like that's the thing at least is that the models still look cute. And then they're like, they did something with the in Gen 9 where it just starts looking like Miis or something, or like worse Miis, off brand Miis.
Like Miis with a little more personality, but it's fake personality.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's my segment.
All right.
For the trails rundown.
Trails by next time for sure.
All right. So last time we were together, I had a nice theme going on. We did the post-apocalypse, and I got it just by complete random chance. It's happening again. We're locking in for a singular segment on one specific thing. How y'all feel about Toho?
I love Toho.
Oh, Toho. My first hyperfixation.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and Toho, you know, we know them. We love them. Great, great shooters. Lots of great characters. There's a Toho for everybody. And of course, the great thing that comes out of Toho is the fan community and fan creations. And you can really only point, you know, like, hey, Toho fan games. There's a whole shit ton of them. Loads of them.
It's a big world.
It's a big pool out there. And I want to first start. I want to give a big shout out to our longtime Sox pal guest, Shady Six, who I think he's pretty much ended up being the curator of my Toho fan game consumption for basically the last 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
Like, I have either, like, found out about games from him, or he's basically ended up generously gifting me some of them over the years. And it's just banger after banger after banger. You know, you got Toho Luna Knights, Scarlet Curiosity, Third Eye, The Genius of Sephiroth, Artificial Dream in Arcadia, Ephemeral Unnatural Balance, Labyrinth of Toho, Kubanashi Recollection. Like, I'm probably missing a few. I'm just trying to ring off all the ones that I know of because of guests either telling me about them, doing videos about them, or sending them to me. Just Toho fan games. So that's where we're at right now. That's the mode we are going to strap in and get locked into. So I played a couple. The first one I played is Cross the Boundaries.
Ooh, this one looks pretty.
So this is another one of those times where I ended up playing a genre that was like a big thing for apparently a lot of people, but just completely passed me by. And just the RPG makery kind of horror game.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of also just like a lot of visual novel segments too. So it's not just that, but
I didn't actually realize there was a walk around component. I thought it was just a visual novel.
No. It's a big walk around solve puzzle thing. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in this game. But this is it's a story that focuses on the Secret Ceiling Club, and they're basically, you know, they're an occult club basically, mm-hmm. and its members are Renko Usami and Mary Bell Hearn. And the funny thing about these two characters is that their origins just aren't in any game at all. They're literally just, my understanding is that they literally come from literature that came on one of Zune's music albums. They've never appeared in any official games in any capacity. But the fandom has really taken to them a lot. So since this is Toho, like Renko and Marybelle aren't just like typical college girls, of course. Renko is basically a living GPS. That's her thing. She can she can look at the sky and tell you exactly where she's at and what time of day it is or whatever. It's a very weird power. And Marybelle visits alternate worlds in her dreams. The game kind of explains all that a hell of a lot better than I can, and it does it with a lot more detail, but if I kind of tried to go over how it's explained in-game, I'd be another, like, 5 minutes trying to, you know, touch on all the various things. So I'm really condensing things here, but the story itself is that Marybelle keeps having dreams where she always ends up being killed in the end, and eventually she ends up disappearing. And Renko has to find her way into those dream worlds / alternate worlds to rescue Marybelle. And while she's doing that, she is also going to end up finding out about a lot about Marybelle's very, really traumatic past. Game kind of goes dark in ways that don't expect a Toho game to go sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
And all of these dream worlds take place in very well crafted, like horrored up versions of some familiar Toho locations. So, you know, hey, there's a Scarlet Devil Mansion, the Magic Forest, Myoren Temple, you know, all of these get reimagined. And like, I love the amount of joy that you can feel that the dev had in recontextualizing all of these locales and all of this music and all of these characters with a more psychological and physical horror aspect. And I think that just deserves a lot of praise. Like I was stunned with how creative this game is with those reimaginings of things that you're already familiar with. You can get to kind of see them in a different way. And basically in all the dream worlds, kind of like I said, there's, you know, you walk around, you explore, you collect items, you solve lots of puzzles, and that part of the game also is just super well done and really clever. Had so much fun with the puzzles in this game, and you know, I'm always that person that's going to be the first to complain about a puzzle.
That's me too.
But I had no problem with any of them. I thought that they were all really pretty clever and tied to the worlds that they were in. Just a lot of really cool meat on that bone. In terms of just how the dev is playing with all of the little environments that he's put you in. It feels very well timed that we're talking about, like, you know, somebody playing around with what feels like an RPG Maker kind of engine and doing a lot of fun things with it, in that style. So, all that stuff's cool, but I think the best part of this game is the story. This game really, really kind of explores the relationship between Rinko and Maribel. Like, these two are, I don't know if there is some kind of, like, mandate or some kind of rule when you, you know, agree to release a commercial Toho fan work. I don't know if there's some kind of thing that explicitly says, like, you're not allowed to have characters dating or anything. So without ever explicitly saying it, these characters are totally girlfriends. They are madly in love with one another. They are always staying over at each other's place. They're always holding hands. They're always telling each other how much they care about each other. It's so unbelievably sweet, and the writing really gets you invested. Like, these characters, even if you don't know them, they're written in a way where they're immediately just engaging, and you're immediately pulled in. And there's also a lot of really good nuance and texture to the way that it explores their relationship, as well as how that relates to each of these characters. Are very, they keep themselves at a distance from people for their own reasons, but it also makes them wary of their own feelings for one another because of the nature of Maribel's powers and, like, the fact that she could disappear one day. And the emotional climax that completely just caught me off guard. There's two endings, and they're both crazy. And the consequences of both endings just further pushes you into understanding how much these two characters really love each other. This game is just fantastic. I have no complaints. Mm. Like, it is a fantastic 3 to 4 hour, $5 video game.
$5? That's $5.
Oh, no!
That sounds like the best kind of arc you could hope for with this kind of RPG Maker. Yeah,
sure. Like, it is so good. Like, and the thing is, this is enjoyable whether you're a Toho fan or not, because this is It's a game that uses Toho as a framing, but not so much that you need to be invested deeply in its lore or understand any in-jokes or anything. There's not a lot of knowledge that's required. The core of the game is literally just, like, a solidly told love story in the middle of magic and horror. And, man, like, I could not be more delighted than I was with Cross the Boundaries. Just, yeah, like, You got an evening and you got $5. Man, I struggle to think that you could do much worse than Cross the Boundaries. Like I said, even if you're not a Toho head, this game is absolutely fantastic.
You mix things up there in a very funny way where you said, I don't think you could do much worse.
Oh. Oh. I promise. You know, words are hard sometimes.
Words are hard sometimes.
It's words fine. Are hard sometimes. Look, man, I don't have a lot at stake for getting words wrong. It's fine. That's fine. Everybody there here.
Is the word police going to come get you?
Probably. They probably will.
Is Yukari going to throw you past the boundary because you get a word wrong?
No, it's going to throw me into a gap.
Throw you into a gap?
Going to throw me into a gap.
Except it's Gap from Umineko.
Oh, no! Wait a minute. No, I'm into that. I'm here for it. No. I mean, I would prefer Zippar and Furfur, but I ain't going to say no to Gap.
Oh, Zippar and Furfur.
Man. I have a need. A mighty need.
I have a hunger.
Anyway, so that's Cross the Boundaries. Play it. It's cool as shit. It'll probably make you cry. It's that kind of game.
What more do you ask for?
Exactly. All right. So here we are,
folks. Now the real star of the show.
Oh, okay. So this is the big one. This is a game that I have been waiting for Since I finished Labyrinth of Toho 2 like 9 years ago, we are finally going to talk
about, what is it?
About Labyrinth of Toho Tri, the Dreaming Girls and the Mysterious Orbs.
I guess when you preface it that way, that is the thing. It makes sense that that's the game.
It probably makes sense that this would be coming after I said Labyrinth of Toho 2. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe while if you're like Super Castlevania 4.
But there you go. Breath of Fire 1.
I think it's been out for a while.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with Labyrinth of Toho? That's crazy.
So I have endlessly shilled for Labyrinth of Toho 2 over the years. I'm happy that that game has a more official release in the West on Steam. I think it is kind of a definitive version of it. It's one of my favorite dungeon crawlers of all time. It's one of my favorite games of all time, period. So this game has a lot to live up to. And I'm just straight up front, I've not even come close to finishing this game. Like, it came out literally like 2 days after our last podcast, I think. So I've had about 3 weeks with it, and I'm only about 40% through it. I'm taking my time because I kind of want to just take time and luxuriate in it, because it's been a 9-year wait, and that second game meant so much to me. But this is also a game that almost demands that I take my time with it.
Yes, that's the vibe.
Yeah, it is. So I think the way that I can describe this game, kind of just like in a very basic way, is it literally feels like someone spent 9 years reiterating on a masterwork. Like, everything that is in this game feels like it is here because 3Peso really sat with it. He sat with those ideas and really considered carefully whether implementing them would contribute to the overall picture, and whether it would make whether all of those things would end up better versions of what was in Labyrinth of Toho 2. And you can sort of see it from just from screenshots. Like, the game's stupidly pretty.
Yes.
Like, I think, like, the Labyrinth of Toho games are literally just like they're ping files throwing math and particle effects at each other. But this game's presentation makes everything just look and feel so much cooler. Like, the menus are gorgeous. The character art is just really, look at these characters. He's like, yep, I love all of them. The dungeons are a huge step up in terms of environments. Like the first Labyrinth of Toho is just like a lot of brown, you know, isometric mazes, and it's very basic.
They're not even environments. They're like,
no, they're just cells. Big. They're just big brown mazes. Labyrinth of Toho 2, you're just filling in circles, and then, like, you know, you've got some, you know, hints of an environment around. And this game just like, oh no, like, there's a really nice tile work on everything. Like, it's just very pretty at all times. And it's not even just like in screenshots. Like, if you see the game in motion, even just like going through menus, it's just like, this just feels really nice and looks really pretty all the time. And I guess sort of digging into the actual meat of the game is just, oh boy, there's so much here. Like, if I tried to sit here and explain, like, every growth system, crafting, combat, character building, we would literally just have an entire episode of the show if you wanted me to explain all that in detail. This is a game that is just mechanically dense in a way that honestly overwhelmed me when I played the demo last year. Like, I felt like, man, is this gonna just be too much for my brain to keep track of at all times? But you really kind of just start finding a rhythm through the system, and it all makes sense. And even when the game's just like piling everything on you pretty fast, everything just kind of keeps feeding back into one another in a way where you, when you're going through that loop of like what you're doing, it's just like, oh, this just all kind of feels natural after a few hours, actually. If you just kind of sit there and live with it and like, don't put up a, don't try to resist it. Just kind of like accept, okay, like crafting. Oh, I don't like crafting, man. I hate crafting.
Probably poison.
But if you just accept that it is a part of this of the game, and it's a very simple crafting system, and then it's just like, okay, I see how everything feeds into everything else now. I see how these character unlocks felt really scary at first, but no, like the game actually is kind of guiding you in the right direction, not through any kind of like tutorial or anything, but just like the systems kind of feed into one another in a way where you just kind of end up stopping at every one along the way. And then you just do the loop again. And it's just like, okay, this feels good and natural. This game also has all of the generosity from Labyrinth of Toho, too. Like, you can still respec and reskill at any time. There's even systems that just, like, let you generate equipment you don't even have materials for. Like, it's really nice in the ways that it's, like, giving the player a lot of advantages or taking some time out of things that maybe you would have had to have grinded for back, you know, in Labyrinth of Toho, too. Like, it's all just really definitely one of those things where it's like, yeah, I can see how there was like 9 years of thought put into this. There is not a part of this game's battle system that isn't plainly documented for you, like at all times. Like, every ability in the game's attack formula is shown, and when you do damage to an enemy, there are indicators that explain how various effects were applied and like what stats calculated the damages and the resistances. And if you're unfamiliar even with the boss game
patterns, right?
Oh yeah, there is an option that you can turn on where if you just like press a button during a boss fight, you can see the boss's entire script, what it does, and how it reacts to things. If that's something you want, like it's stuff that's just like being surfaced here in a way that you don't typically see in these kinds of games. And I think that makes this game a lot more, you know, like, oh, my brain is going to be just working overtime while playing this.
I mean, that seems like the thing here is that the game is giving you perfect maximum information and letting you fully like respec on a dime, so that it can then turn around and have encounters that demand that level.
Absolutely. And like
transparency,
the boss battles are this game's big calling card. You know, they are all meaty. They are way more mechanically involved than Labyrinth of Toho 2's. Like, they are overtuned in ways that feel like this guy knew who the sickos were playing the plus disc and the post game in Labyrinth of Toho 2, which that wasn't me. So when I got to some of these new mechanics or these bosses that are just so hyper tuned in a way that's just like, man, this feels like do I just need a specific team to do this? And it's like, no, there still seems to be a genuinely pretty good spread of strategies that you can employ to tackle pretty much any boss fight. Like, I don't feel that any fight that I have won that I've had to bust my ass winning that that's the only way you can do it. Yeah, I've never felt that way. Like, I've had to put my thinking cap on a hell of a lot through a lot of pretty rough fights, but I've also cracked a few of them on the first try, you know, and just being able to adapt on the fly. So the game still has like that really good feeling you get when you crack a nut like that, or when you finally dial a boss in. It's like, I know what to do with you now, and then it'll do some real fuck shit later. My favorite one, I'm not going to spoil who it is, but early on, there's like a boss fight where, you know, you kind of do the normal Labyrinth of Toho thing. You poke it, you go in, you poke around, get your weaknesses sorted out, you know, get your team sorted back up, and then you go in and you eventually find a way to win the fight easy. But when the character dies, she immediately respawns and is invulnerable for 4 turns. And in the fourth turn, she's literally going to hit you with an attack that, if you have not prepared, will wipe your entire team. So, like, I literally just had to kind of, like, the first time I thought I had a chance of winning, my heart was racing because it was just like, oh god, do I have enough buffs out? So I'm just, like, spending those last 4 turns throwing everything at one character and praying. And then she ends up taking nothing to the attack. And then you just go boop her on the nose for one HP, and it's very funny. But that's just kind of like one example. Like, the game has a lot of gimmicks that you really need to pay attention to, like, what the game is telling you when like things are happening with characters, because characters will like inflict themselves with like weird statuses that you've never heard of, and then you kind of have to go like pop up their status and be like, what does that mean? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, she's doing this during this phase, and I shouldn't attack her at all because she counters with a fucking party wipe. All right. You know, so you got the game really wants you to use that information, and it's not just there because, you know, it looks cool and fancy. So a lot of systems in play there. Like, that stuff is just, the boss fights are amazing, but kind of like adding to what is already a dizzying amount of mechanics are the characters themselves. Oh my God. This almost broke me during the demo, because I thought, I'm going to be too dumb for this game. I'm not going to be able to do this. Nearly every character in this game isn't just a character. There are 48 characters, and a lot of them are their own separate system. Every character has a skill set unique to them. They've got a skill tree, and a good portion of them have to be played in battle in some specific ways to function at their best. To use a real simple example, Patchouli is a mage that is very powerful. And when you cast, say, a fire spell, she will gain what is called a stack, which stacks are kind of the universal term that this game uses for resources that characters build up in battle that are separate from their magic points. So Patchouli casts fire. She then gets a fire philosopher stone buff, or a stack. And that means that from that point on, when she uses fire again, the fire attack will be more powerful. Real simple one to work with. And then you get skills that sometimes allow you to start battles with random philosopher stone buffs. So a real simple version of kind of what we're going for. And these things just go absolutely wild, because like the skill system this time is a skill tree. So, and you can respect these at any point again, so it's fine. So a character will often have like two or three different modes that they can be in that you can build different types of stacks for, you know, there are a lot of characters that just have like anywhere from one to three different ways you can play them. And like I said, I was really afraid it would make everyone feel really gimmicky. But those systems actually, like, they start becoming easy to manage. It's just that when you are rolling around a dungeon with 12 characters at a time, that is a lot to keep in your brain at all times. And, like, when you throw off, like, certain attacks, you'll see, like, five or six, like, names of stacks popping up on your character, and it just looks insane. But again, I think it's like everything else with this game, where it starts to, your brain gets used to it at some point if you stick with it. But this is absolutely a game that, like, I can't play it if I'm tired. Like, I can't play it. Like, I like to play dungeon crawler games to relax. I think that you know, Etrian Odyssey is just prime comfort food. Like, even Labyrinth of Toho 2 was just comfort food. This game just, no. Like, there are so many things going on, not only in combat, not only in dungeons, but also just behind the scenes while you're at base that you've got to keep track of. And it's a lot. Like, this game is asking a lot for a lot of brain power here. And that, not counting the fact that... That's not counting the fact that by the time you get to, like, the first fourth of the game, the dungeon gimmicks and puzzles start really kicking in. First one was like, oh boy, it's block pushing time. And can you imagine how I felt?
Dropped.
Done. And there was actually a post-release patch, because the dev had received I have to imagine just like really loud assholes who just want everything to be the same thing all the time did not like that. The dungeons were more gimmicky and puzzly once you sort of got out of the first fourth of the game, and he rolled out a couple of patches that stripped out a lot of the puzzles. Like it just kind of and the community really kind of like swelled around seeing that happen, and it was just like, no dude, we like this shit, this is the good stuff. And it was nice to kind of see him kind of realize that, like, no, like it's just a lot of very loud people that weren't, you know, it's just, it's Steam, you know, like this is his first major release by himself on a global scale, and I think that he kind of knee-jerked a bit seeing some of those negative reactions, and I'm glad that like the translator that's been working with him this whole time was sort of able to kind of get that point across. It's like, no, listen, the people that matter that are playing this game and enjoying it, they love this stuff, and it's nice because, like, he, you know, he said himself, like, you know, and when he reverted the patch out and put the original puzzles back in, he's like, this is like, this is my ideal version of the game. You know, I want people to enjoy it. So it was really nice that he was able to kind of like get that all figured out and stuff.
That's nice.
It's really hard when you're putting out a game that's deliberately really hard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because like this happened to Silk Song as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where they wanted to revert some stuff immediately.
Mm-hmm. Red flowers.
But even like some of the bosses that did actually get nerfed, like
I remember the one boss getting nerfed,
the one moth thing.
Yeah, really, yeah. I think I'll close out here. Sorry, I've gone a little long, but this is a follow-up.
This is a game you were very psyched about.
Yeah, I think the story is really, really awesome in this game so far. Huh. It's. I won't go into like the full details, but basically everybody kind of gets pulled into a nightmare world. And the game even kind of like has this dreamy haze to it when you look at it, and it sort of feels very Persona 4 inspired, where characters have avatar versions of themselves that represent their deepest insecurities, their fears, and their hurt. And despite Toho's usual, like, upbeat and silly tone, like, the moments when the party kind of has to help someone, like, accept themselves or help them realize that they're someone that's, like, worth love and friendship, it's honestly, like, I've had a definite couple of moments of tearing up. It's like, oh, Kogasa, everybody loves you. You're not you're not just a worthless umbrella. There are definitely a few moments like that, and you know, like even from characters you don't expect having that kind of deepness to them, like Marissa having this jealousy over Reimu because she sees Reimu as someone that is like perfect, and she just like, you know, it's just, and they go through that and they have these really, really long conversations about it. It's almost Mary Skelter in a sense, where they're having so much dialogue because it's not a staple of these kind of games usually. But I really do like the way that they're digging into the characters. I like what they're doing with the story. And it's also timely that the Secret Ceiling Club are playing a major role in this game. I didn't know that was a thing. So playing this and Cross the Boundaries, like, I was already immediately dialed into, oh, Mary Bell and Renko are here. And Renko's awesome. She has her own cool little growth system that's really neat. But yeah, like the way that they explore those characters, I think, is really, really nice so far.
Honestly, I wasn't even aware that these games had story to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, Labyrinth of Toho 1 is kind of silly. Labyrinth of Toho 2 does have a story, and it actually is pretty good. I just think the writing chops in 3 are so much more dialed in. Like, wanting to tell, like, an emotional story that's, you know, again, like, I'm always going to be a sucker for, like, the, you know, characters, you know, reassuring someone that they're worth being loved and shit. It's like, oh, that's always going to get me.
That's real nice.
Yeah.
It definitely sounds like they kind of leveled up on every aspect.
Yeah, there. Yeah. This game does feel. I don't know that I can't even begin to tell you if like how I'm going to come out of this like Labyrinth of Toho 2 versus Labyrinth of Toho Tri. I don't know how that's going to land. Mm-hmm. Like even at this point, I can't say like I like this better than the other because they still feel very similar. Like the combat system hasn't fundamentally changed. It's still very much the same thing. I like a lot of what they're doing here. You know, like I'm not always the biggest fan of skill trees, but you can easily respect them at any point. So like, why would I be mad about skill trees? The only thing I don't like about the skill trees is that they're level gated. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Labyrinth of Toho 2, you can just like, oh, like right out the gate, I'm just going to dump 5 points into this, you know, skill that I want and then go blow a boss's asshole out. And I feel that like the reason things were kind of, there's definitely some tuning being done in this game where you definitely feel like he's like, I know how people cracked open that second game and I would really like them to not do that this time, but I don't want to do it in a way where it's nerfing something. So let's mm-hmm. just do a different system that mm-hmm. still gives you a lot of flexibility because every character's skill tree is something like 100 skills or something. It's nuts.
The systems on systems and systems in this is ridiculous.
It is crazy. Like I said, when I played the demo, I was kind of scared that this game was going to be too much for me. But, you know, I'm like 38 hours or so in, and I feel like I have a grasp of everything. I understand how everything works. Like when I am confronted with something that I don't understand, my brain immediately jumps to, okay, I have ideas, instead of, well, I'm fucking lost. So I think that, like, despite the fact that the game doesn't always kind of sit you down and explain how characters work, it doesn't explain some certain things, you play around in the systems enough, and it's just like, okay, I got it. So, yeah, man, like, this is a game I'm not blasting through. I'm luxuriating. Like, we will probably be hearing about this game at some point down the future. Like, I'm not going to have finished this game by the next episode, I don't think, because I'm just taking my time, and I'm also playing another game in tandem with it, which I'll talk about next time, because I think I will have probably finished the other game by the next time we're here.
Good. Is it another Toho dungeon crawler?
It absolutely is.
I was joking.
No, it absolutely is. But like this game for me right now, it is a delicious Wagyu steak dinner, and I just kind of want to enjoy every bite to its fullest. So I don't know how long it's going to take. You know, eventually I'm going to have to finish it at some point. But right now I'm just kind of having fun letting like poking on. It's like, all right, I finished that stratum. I'm going to go over here and play around with something smaller for a while and then come back to this and dive back in, get hyper-focused and into that again, and then pull back a little bit. I did the same thing with Mary Skelter 2 and Mary Skelter Finale, and I think that it helped me enjoy those games a lot more instead of just mainlining it. It's just, I don't think that's the way I like approaching these games. It just kind of always feels mm-hmm. nice to have a home to come back to. And that's kind of what Labyrinth of Toho Tri is for me right now. And it probably will be for the next couple, 2 or 3 months or so. So, yeah. Labyrinth of Toho Tri, man. It is a monster. It is an impressive monster. But
it's fucking hitting.
It is hitting so good.
Is it basically a single developer game?
Yes. Yeah. 3Peso is a solo dev. So he's crazy. The one that had to implement these thousands of skills and balance all of these characters. And so for one person to be able to do that, and on top of like doing all the dungeons and doing all the puzzles and all the background stuff like crafting and all these other systems, it's just like, dude, how does one person do that?
Takes 9 years.
It takes 9 years. It takes 9 years.
But in this case, I'll say a 9-year dev cycle sounds justified.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. This game feels like it was nine. Like, I don't know whether it was being developed for the full 9 years. I don't know when exactly he started working on it. But I can tell you, this is a game that feels like it's had a shit ton of thought and love put into it, and it is absolutely like you like dungeon crawlers, like I'm always going to say Labyrinth of Toho 2, you know, go give it a spin. But if you really want the new hotness, like you can still jump into LOT Try totally fine. If you would rather, if you, you know, kind of just want all of those nice bells and whistles of attack formulas and stuff and all those nice, you know, all that nice quality of life stuff, you know, I would say, yeah, like you could play this totally fine.
Two sounds less scary.
Two is scary. Like, because I always recommend people, like, look, I'll be honest, you'll probably want a wiki open to kind of get some character recruitment stuff down and to kind of understand how attack formulas work and maybe to get you through a couple of bosses where you're just not sure what's happening, because that game does not explain anything. This game at least does have an in-game tutorial to kind of help you, to help point you in a direction, but it will not be what gets you to the finish line if you're struggling against a boss. You're still going to have to use your brain.
Cool. Good shit.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so, so happy that this game turned out as good as it's been so far, and I'm just so looking forward to getting more into it after I finish making my RPG Maker 2003 video game. So to bring it back full circle, since we're getting ready to close things out here, John's Game Jam's going strong. You still got to have, like, by the time this episode comes out, you're still going to have about 7 days to kind of get something done. RPG Maker 2003 is $2 right now. So. Yeah.
Come on. You know you want to.
Come on. I'm excited. Like, I'm going to release a video game. I'm getting giddy. All right, John.
Is it a Toho fan game?
No, it's not a Toho fan game.
I bet you can find RPG Maker sprites of Toho characters.
God, I would not be shocked. It's probably the easiest thing in the world. I would not be shocked, but yeah. So, John, where can the internet folks at home find you?
FarawayTimes.com.
And Rhett.
Playing trails.
And I'll be playing Toho, probably. Whole bunch of Toho. That is going to do it for this episode of the show. We, of course, always appreciate your time. We always appreciate the discussion. And we hope you have a nice rest of your whatever, wherever you are. And until next time, please remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love you.